I think this is it for now. So I'm handing it over to you, Dr. Michael, and please enjoy.
Good morning. Thank you, Marlies. Yeah. And I'm so glad to be here. By way of introduction, I'm a medical doctor, and I've been in the healing arts more than 40 years. I'm also a licensed acupuncturist, and I also have a master's degree in Buddhist and Western psychology. So I have a very broad background, and I guess I feel I qualify as a knowledgeable expert. So, as a physician and a knowledgeable expert, in this current situation, I feel I have a responsibility to speak out, to, as they say, render my opinion. And please know, it's just my opinion. And if my opinion goes against the mainstream, it's still my opinion. So, you can't... You have to stand by your understanding in this situation. You can't be swayed by the various things flying around, you know, oh, you're crazy, that kind of thing. Okay, so I don't usually think of myself as a doctor. It's something I've done. I'm retired now. But for this discussion, I'm going to put on my badge of office. So you know I have that authority. Anyway, okay, so what is the situation? We've had this epidemic for some time, and the purpose of this meeting is for me to suggest a regimen that you could have in place and ready should someone be threatened by COVID. And please remember that that is the exception when people get COVID, that more than 99% of people recover. But certain people at high risk need to be a little more cautious. If you have a chronic illness, if you have asthma or emphysema or diabetes or congestive heart failure or any of these chronic degenerative diseases, and this protocol that I'm going to suggest today has a number of aspects, but the centerpiece is a medicine called ivermectin. So I want to give you a little context and then kind of summarize the regimen and then open it up to discussion. And I'm very glad to see there's another physician on the call so that we can get another angle on it. And really my hope is that we can create a community outside of the mainstream narrative that can really help people because they're not being helped in the mainstream narrative. So let me just share this one thing here. This is the CDC website, okay? And if you are sick with COVID-19, this is today, this is a live website. Here's what you're supposed to do according to the CDC. Stay home.
We don't see anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for letting me know. So let me share that. Okay, do you see it now?
Yes.
Okay, so stay home. This is the CDC website. Stay home, rest, stay hydrated, which means drink enough fluids, take over-the-counter medicines such as acetaminophen. That's it. And then if you have any emergency warning signs, which we'll discuss later, then you have to take it to the next level, go to the emergency room or call your doctor and so on. So this to me is really injurious, that there are many, many things you can do in the context of COVID or really any viral infection that improve the chances of a positive outcome. To make this statement, let's just say, in my medical opinion, this isn't true. Let's leave it at that. And then as I said, ivermectin is the centerpiece of this protocol I'm suggesting. So here's the FDA website. Here's their stance on ivermectin. Why you should not use ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID-19. And basically, they're saying it's not approved, that taking large doses is dangerous. Well, that's true of anything, even water. More than 22 liters of water a day, you can die. So even oxygen, right? If you breathe pure oxygen for a while, your lungs burn up and you die. And then, of course, do never take ivermectin from a veterinary source, they're really saying. Okay, so very much against this protocol. So know that, and I think people are going to need to decide who they're going to believe. And ultimately, I always suggest that you go into that internal compass with which we are all endowed, which is right here behind the sternum, in the retrosternal space, as a physician would say, and in the end, consult that. You know, you can gather some information. You can't cover all the ground. Believe me, I've tried, and that would just be exhausting. Gather as much information as you feel is right, and then go in your heart. But if you do decide that this mainstream narrative, that there's nothing you can do for COVID to stop it from getting bad, don't go to the hospital until you're really sick, ivermectin is useless and dangerous. If you don't believe that narrative, then don't we really have an obligation as humans in the web of life of all humans and humans in the web of life of all Earth to contact others, and I would suggest more one-on-one, and if they're open to the possibility, start educating people. Because some beer company, I read in the New York Times, spent $37 million around the time of the Super Bowl, if there was a Super Bowl, for advertising to convince, to overcome, here's what they said, to overcome vaccine hesitancy. Okay? So if any of you happen to have $37 million lying around for me to overcome FDA and CDC obfuscation, please be sure and contact me. Okay, but we're really in a David and Goliath situation here. And from my point of view, what we need to do is withdraw from the media and speak to each other one-on-one, or at least in small groups like this. Okay, so just to hit a few points before we actually talk about the protocol. The risk of COVID infection is trivial for the healthy. But it is greater if you're already weak or sick. They say age is a risk factor independently. I'm not so sure. In my opinion, we don't really have a COVID epidemic. We have an epidemic of chronic degenerative disease. That's disease like diabetes, high blood pressure, what they call metabolic syndrome, autoimmune disease, so on and so forth. We have a population that's so weakened that something was going to come along. It's kind of like saying, if the forest gets dry enough, something's going to light it on fire, right? And it would be silly in that situation to say, well, there could be a rock slide. One rock could hit another. A spark could fly and start a forest fire. So let's get rid of all the rocks, right? That's kind of my view of the world response to COVID. That being said, if you or a loved one is vulnerable, you would want to prepare now. Because if someone does get COVID and it's going the wrong way, which again is a very small percentage, right? Less than 1%. But if it is going the wrong way, you want to have things in place at that time. It's kind of like saying, oh my God, the river's rising, there's going to be a flood. Well, let's get some sandbags. Where do you get sandbags? I don't know. Let's call around. Well, I called this place, but they ran out of sandbags. I called that place, they ran, you know. And I have seen so much delay in the medical system that you definitely want to have this stuff at home, on hand, and know how to use it before the event. And this is the service that you can provide if you yourself are healthy. This is the service that you can provide to your loved ones who may be vulnerable. As to the background of the COVID epidemic, what's really going on, who knows, how bad is it really, who knows, the statistics are distorted, the tests are unreliable, the media is unreliable. That's not my area. I just want to recommend this protocol, that you be prepared with this protocol, or some other protocol that you have confidence in. Personally, I've averted hundreds of viral infections with Chinese herbs, because that's one area of expertise for me. See, you have Chinese herbs on hand. It's very straightforward. But of course, the best is just be healthy. And then I wanted to say about medical decision making that medicine is really based on probabilities. It's very rarely based on certainties. So if I'm in clinic and someone comes in and says, gee, I have a headache, it's really bothering me, and I take the history and so on and so forth, I say, well, it looks like a tension headache, you know, do ABC, get some massage, don't go on the computer so much, try to do something to get your stress down, you know. Okay, fine. Now, that could be a little artery in the brain that's swelling up and letting a little blood off into the brain. That's possible. But improbable unless they have something else that suggests that's what's happening. So you cannot rush everybody with a headache into the emergency room and get an MRI and make sure they're not bleeding in the brain. We're operating on probabilities. Should you get tested if you think you may have COVID? In my opinion, no. It creates delay. The tests are unreliable. And so I say no. It creates delay and uncertainty. And the signature anecdote about that is that I believe it was the president of Uganda who swabbed a mango and sent it in, and the mango was positive for COVID. Okay, so we're to the protocol. Hallelujah. This protocol was developed by a group called the Frontline Critical Care Collaborative, FLCCC. And you can go up on their website to get updates and to get a lot of the details. You can also go up on their website to see the research. So really, this is what convinced me. You know, step one in my story, I'd been studying the COVID epidemic a lot because people were asking me and I felt responsible. So I saw this video of one of the doctors testifying before a Senate committee or a Senate panel, saying, look, just look at the evidence. Ivermectin works. And he was very upset because he felt like, wow, ivermectin is being suppressed and people are dying because of this. And that, if I have to buy a narrative, that's the narrative that I will stand in for the moment. And he said, you know, don't believe me. Just go look at the research. So I went and I downloaded the research, you know, 320 references or something. And I started looking through all those papers, and I was convinced. And again, I have no certainty, but this is my medical opinion. And I have, let's say, a stronger opinion that whatever the true story and whatever the true medicine, it's not the true story of the CDC and the FDA, and it's not the true medicine of the CDC and FDA. So we're on our own, friends. And we need to join together and figure out where to go from here. Okay, so this medicine, ivermectin, what is it? It's a medicine that I think was discovered in the 1970s, and they found out they basically use it for parasites. They use it for things like scabies and ringworm and some of these tropical things that get into people. And it's been quite effective and it's been quite safe. And it's out of patent, so it's also inexpensive, which I believe is its major sin from the point of view of the complex of Big Pharma, the research establishment, and the co-opted United States government agencies. So then as the COVID epidemic progressed, some people were finding, wow, this seems to help COVID. And I invite you to go look at all those papers. And even more so, what I would invite you to do is go download all those papers, print them all out, and thump it on your doctor's desk. Because my little sister got COVID. She's 3,000 miles from me, so I'm kind of like managing by phone. And I'm freaking out, but of course, as a physician, you try to maintain your composure. So she goes to her internal medicine doctor, and these guys are kind of the nerds of the medicine world, you know. The joke about the internal medicine doctor is they know everything but don't do anything. But that's not really true. They give medicines and they make referrals. But they're supposed to be the super knowledgeable ones. And my little sister says, hey, what about ivermectin? And the doctor says, I think I've heard something about that. So that's the state of the medical nation, or at least it was for her on that day. So we can educate our doctors. They don't like it. They find it profoundly threatening and annoying, but I still encourage it. In the use of ivermectin, there's kind of three different contexts. One is, hey, I'm perfectly healthy, in which case you don't really need ivermectin. Another is, you know, I have emphysema. I have a weakened immune system. I have cancer, I have high blood pressure, I have diabetes. If I get COVID, I'm at serious risk. And in that case, you might take a little bit of ivermectin periodically. And the protocol they have for that is you take a dose on day one, a dose on day three, and then a dose every 2 weeks. So that's kind of ongoing. And then if you're healthy and you don't take ivermectin, but you get around somebody who really has bad COVID, then you might want to take a little bit of ivermectin kind of to stave that virus off. And that's called post-exposure prophylaxis. I don't want to get it. I knew I got coughed on, and I don't want to get it. By the way, I did see one thing that said that your risk of getting COVID and it being bad is proportional to what they call the viral load in the person who transmits it to you. In other words, the more teeming your system is with the virus, the more likely you are to get it and get a bad case. And if they just have, you know, a little bit of COVID, then you're much less at risk. So that's post-exposure prophylaxis. For the healthy, it would be a dose on day one of ivermectin and a dose on day three of ivermectin, and then stop. Simple. And then it's, well, I got COVID. I mean, a lot of people get COVID. They have COVID. They get over COVID, and they never even knew it, right? So, but this is the scenario where, oh, I got something, and I think it's COVID. And we'll talk a little bit about how you might know that just by your own knowledge, not by a test. And as I said, I'm not a big fan of those tests. But they call that in this protocol the outpatient protocol for COVID. And then it's a dose a day until you're better. And you would take it for at least 2 days. But at 5 days, if you still weren't better, you have to stop. You can't keep taking ivermectin every day on and on. Okay? And all this is in the manual, which I encourage you to get. If you don't have it, just email me. Marlies, maybe you could put my email in the chat if you're willing.
Yes, I will do that.
Okay, and you know, I want this to spread. I want everybody to know this. Okay, this is going to save some lives in my world. So then, as it turns out, there's certain dietary supplements that if you take them, you can really reduce your risk of getting ill from COVID. And there's good data, in my opinion, looked really good, showing this. So the first one is vitamin D. And the dosages are in the manual. But what they did is they looked at people who were deficient in vitamin D, which is apparently quite common, and then at people who were not deficient in vitamin D. And the people who were deficient were much more likely to get very sick if they got COVID. And then vitamin C, which is the great granddaddy of functional medicine, you know, that Linus Pauling got a Nobel Prize for that. And by the way, Linus Pauling also felt that the research establishment was corrupt enough to interfere with its function. And his statement was, if I discovered a cure for cancer, there would be men running down the street chasing me, and they would have machine guns. That from a Nobel Prize winner, huh? Okay, so vitamin C, and then zinc. And zinc has a special place, because apparently zinc inhibits one of the little biological machines, which they call enzymes, which helps the COVID virus ramp up production to replicate itself. So it jams that enzyme, it's really good. And then the issue is that zinc has trouble getting into the cell. A lot of people are zinc deficient. And also it doesn't just naturally pop into the cell like a lot of things. So then you give quercetin, which is a supplement that's really derived from food. You know, it's derived from fruits and vegetables. And quercetin allows the zinc to get into the cell and jam the COVID enzyme. And again, you know, there's research suggesting that people who are zinc deficient are more vulnerable to COVID. So that's the core of supplements. They also recommend melatonin. And this is an interesting story, which has kind of a moral that goes way beyond, I don't want to get sick from COVID. Everybody, most people, know of melatonin as a way to help you sleep. And melatonin is a chemical messenger in the body. And the chemical messengers in the body are called hormones. There's all different kinds of hormones. It's a chemical messenger in the body that your brain secretes when the eyes don't see light. So, you know, comes around sunset and you're out there off the grid and the light goes way down. And this little center in the brain says, hey, there's no light. Okay, let's pump out some melatonin. Gee, I feel relaxed. I feel tired. I feel sleepy. See you in the morning. That's melatonin. Well, everybody's like, oh, melatonin makes you go to sleep. And the moral is it's never that simple. As it turns out, melatonin has many other actions, complex and extensive actions. And basically, these actions say, we're going to sleep, and now do all those things we need to do while you're asleep. And what's that? Heal the body and get rid of inflammation. So melatonin initiates healing. It just doesn't get you to fall asleep. Once more demonstrating the essential role of rest and sleep in staying healthy and healing. So that's one of the most neglected medicines in a culture that says, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I've got to grasp the full gusto of life. Hand me a Coke and a pizza and let's get going, you know. You know, and then it's also so funny. Well, fatigue is one of the most common presenting complaints in the primary care clinic. And people go through incredible contortions about, you know, oh my God, what does it mean? Is my thyroid low? Am I deficient in a trace element? Maybe I'm in an electrical field, you know, on and on and on. What does it mean? What does it mean? Well, how about fatigue means you need to rest? How about that one? So for the protocol, I do not recommend taking melatonin every night. And the reason is that the dynamic of the chemical messengers in the body is if they're not needed, then the cells secreting them start to kind of shrink down. And then when you need them, it takes them a while to ramp back up. Okay? So if you every night make melatonin, that part of your brain says, well, gee, we don't need to be working. Let's just kick back in atrophy. And then if you don't take melatonin, now you're really stuck. You're wide awake. So I would only take melatonin when I'm sick. Or I take it once or twice a week to help me sleep. But every night, I don't think that's such a great idea. And in that, I disagree with the Frontline Critical Care Coalition. And then these supplements, they boost the dose if you get sick. They boost the dose if you get sick. So that's the preventative situation. And I really think you can stave off that getting sick from COVID quite effectively with that regimen. You also have to live a healthy lifestyle. Excuse me. Now, if you do get COVID or a loved one gets COVID and is ill from it, which is a very small percentage, remember, then there's certain things you change. So one is, if you're sick from COVID, you're liable to feel very tired and weak. And so it's important to hydrate. One might not feel like it. And my criteria of hydration is, am I urinating regularly, and what is the color? If it's dark yellow, you're not getting enough fluids. If it's light yellow or clear, you're getting enough fluids. And then we need to breathe. That people are very fatigued from COVID, lie in bed, they don't want to get up. But really, it's the stasis in the respiratory system that allows that all that inflammation to kick in. So both for prevention and if you're ill from COVID, I recommend deep breathing. And I just do one. You raise your arms, you breathe in. You let your arms drop, you breathe out. So, you know, get out of bed. Do that 5 times. Do that 4 times a day, set of 5. You really need to do that. And to move around. Because one big issue when someone is ill from COVID, which again is less than 1%, right? But if someone is ill from COVID, is that they tend to clot. And that's a big component of how they get really sick from the cytokine storm. When there's inflammation, the body tends to clot much easier. So move around, pump that blood, because it's not just the heart that pumps the blood. It's the muscles and the breathing. So you don't want that. You don't want clotting, so you have to move around. And if you have a loved one, you know, you kind of have to give them encouragement because they don't want to do it. You know, they're like, God, I can barely sit up and walk to the bathroom. Then you up the doses of all these things. And then you do something to thin the blood, as they say. Make it less likely to clot. Hydration is important. Moving is important. Breathing is important. The frontline critical care folks recommend aspirin at a low dose. Some people disagree, so there's debate. There's other anticoagulants, particularly herbal anticoagulants. So as an herbalist, I'd probably go in that direction. Salvia is one of the common ones. Salvia. And my friend, the acupuncturist, was talking about safflower. The safflower moves the blood, makes it less likely to clot. Okay, but don't go overboard. When you see the story, oh my God, people died from ivermectin. Well, the usual adult dose of ivermectin is 12 milligrams for the average body weight. So if someone goes into a spasm of fear and starts taking 120 milligrams, 10 times the dose, yeah, for sure they're going to die. So it's really the fear that killed them and the lack of learning. That's why I want everybody to learn and know what they're doing. It's not the medicine. As Paracelsus said, the difference between medicine and poison is only the dose. And we all know that. I mean, in the European tradition, they used to give arsenic for various ailments, but you have to get the dose right. And in the Chinese tradition, that they don't do it anymore, at least not on my watch, but they used to give lead for certain conditions. But again, it's always in the dose. Okay, so then you need to know when it's time to say, uh-oh, this is no longer stay-at-home COVID. This is get some help COVID. And ideally, you've established a relationship with a physician who is aware enough to have this approach to COVID, and you can call them on the phone or some kind of healthcare provider. And I'm retired, but between you and me, you know, if the going gets rough, here's my phone number. And we can put it in the chat as well. 831-233-8811. Because they're going to be able to figure out better what the story is. But if you don't have that access and you get some of these red flags, then it's just time to go to the emergency room or dial 911. Because they have things in the emergency room that you probably don't have at home. Oxygen and anti-inflammatory steroids. So the first step in knowing when it's time, because you definitely don't want to go down there if it's not time. The first step of knowing when it's time is to have the equipment. And one of the key pieces of equipment is called a pulse oximeter. And so oximeter is just oxygen meter. It's a little gizmo. I love little gizmos. You can get them for like $30. If you want to get the Cadillac, that's $300. And you just put it on your finger, and it looks at your blood, and it says, gee, your arterial blood had 90% of the hemoglobin molecules in your arterial blood have oxygen on them, and the other 10% don't, or 99% or whatever. So that's a pulse oximeter. It's easy to learn to use, it's affordable, and it's a key piece of equipment if you want to be prepared for this fork in the road, this knowing when it's time to get help. And of course you want a thermometer. It's good to have a blood pressure cuff. That's about it for the key equipment. And then you want to get baselines, because if you have or a loved one has a lung disease, then their baseline might not be quote unquote normal. Or if you're way above sea level, if you're 10,000 feet, you're not going to get the same reading of blood oxygen saturation that you would at sea level. So you want baselines. And you also follow the symptoms. So here you are, you called your doctor didn't call back, she's swamped, the phones are down, whatever, and so you're following these vital signs, you've established baselines, and if you're normal, then the line they're drawing is, gee, if you usually have a pulse ox of 96% or 99% or whatever, and that drops below 94% for more than an hour, then it's time to take action. Go to the emergency room or dial 911. Okay? And it brings up a very interesting point that COVID is unique in a certain aspect, which is what they call silent hypoxemia. Hypoxemia is just hypo means low, and emia means blood, like anemia. That's, you know, you don't have enough red blood cells, right? Hypoxemia means low oxygen blood. So silent hypoxemia means, wow, you don't have enough oxygen in the blood, and you're not even short of breath. That is weird, because normally people get short of breath when the oxygen in the blood drops below a certain level. But for some reason, that doesn't happen in COVID. And they feel very, very tired. They may get confused because the brain's not getting enough oxygen. And, of course, their immune system can't function because the immune system needs good oxygen to function. So, but they're not short of breath. So that's why you need the pulse ox. And if that pulse ox drops, even if they're not short of breath, time to go to the emergency room or dial 911 if you can't get your physician on the phone. And another one is the breathing rate. So a normal breathing rate in an adult, of course, all the parameters are different for children. But a normal breathing, but a healthy child, very low risk. Normal breathing rate in an adult is 12 to 18 breaths per minute. So you got to sit there and watch him for, say, watch him for 30 seconds, multiply by 2. Okay. But of course you want a baseline, because that could be higher in a lot of situations. If they're anxious, your breathing rate, oh my God, right? Your breathing rate goes up. If you have a fever, your breathing rate goes up. So, but if that breathing rate goes to 30, that's definitely red alert, red alert. And in my opinion, if they have a baseline under 18, and even if it goes to 22, I would start to be very concerned. And then if they get too weak to get out of bed, then you need help. And if they become confused, they don't know what's going on. Of course, they might have been confused at baseline, right, if they had dementia. But if they were clear at baseline and they become confused, then that's a red flag. And then if you can't wake them up, that's definitely a red flag. And that emphasizes the need to have somebody there, if possible. And if you can't have somebody in the house with you, or you can't go in the house with them, and I certainly, if I was healthy, would not hesitate to go in a house of someone who had COVID. I would not be concerned about that contagion. And then, gee, you could take ivermectin prophylaxis. I know an ER doctor who's been working there for months and takes ivermectin prophylaxis and hasn't contracted COVID. And he's definitely in one of the higher risk groups. So those are the red flags. Okay? At a minimum, you would have somebody, a friend who's calling you, you know, 4 or 5 times a day saying, oh, are you doing okay? And then if you don't answer, then that person knows to activate the support system. So there's your list, and it's in the COVID preparedness manual. You want a pulse oximeter. You want ivermectin, a thermometer, the supplements we talked about, and then something to thin the blood should you need it. Let me say a word about getting ivermectin. It's really a subject that's in great flux. I have a friend. I asked her to prescribe me ivermectin. She's a medical doctor. She's pretty supportive of alternative medicine. But she said, I'm afraid to write you a prescription because I don't know if I would get in trouble with the medical board. So a lot of doctors are in a fear state about ivermectin. There is a list of doctors willing to prescribe ivermectin on the Frontline Critical Care website. You just search flccc.com, and there's a link to that list in the COVID preparedness manual. There's another list by people who are not in the FLCCC, and there's a link to that list in the COVID preparedness manual. Of course, I can't warranty anything about who those doctors are, if they're any good, but that's a place to start. And then, of course, I could lose my medical license and be fined more money than I have, and possibly be incarcerated if I was to say, gee, go out and get some horse ivermectin. So I'm not saying that, but I am saying in a wilderness situation where you didn't have access to medical care, you were cut off from the medical system, you were satisfied you have COVID, and there was a tube of ivermectin horse paste lying around, well, in that situation, it might be better to take it. So that's what I'll say about that. Then finally, really, the work of healing is something that we need to do on a regular basis. There's no point going, oh my God, you know, I have COVID. Now I'll start working out and eating a healthy diet, so on and so forth. So I want to say I have a Zoom every week about that. It's called In the Palace of Health. It's a joyful Zoom about how to stay healthy, how to connect with life, how to draw more life into us, so on and so forth. That's Fridays at 11, and everyone's welcome. I know some of you have come on there before. But that's the real cure for COVID, is prevention. And in the Palace of Health, I have a strong Taoist influence, Taoist medicine. I find there's a certain categories that we need to work on. So the first would be learning, you know, to say, make a commitment. Well, I need to learn how to stay healthy, because what my patients used to tell me as a doctor, it was very touching. They would say, I'm in your hands. That's very touching. And I don't feel that one can really say that anymore to most doctors. And with my apologies and regrets to the doctors one can say that to. So we need to take the initiative. The medical system, as you saw on the CDC and the FDA website, the medical system is not going to take the initiative. We're on our own out here. Okay? So first would be to make a commitment. Well, I'm going to learn about this. I'm going to learn how to stay healthy. And the second, I feel the most important aspect of being healthy is state of mind. That the negative state of mind, and we can trace this out on the biochemical level, it's the negative state of mind prevents the body from healing, initiates inflammation. When you have that baseline level of inflammation, then when you get something like a coronavirus, which, by the way, is one of the three most common causes of the common cold, okay? Generally, you know, there's many strains of coronaviruses, but not a big deal. And it's not a big deal for healthy people in this epidemic, right? So state of mind is the most key thing. And you will find, you know, my friend Wayne, God rest his soul, Wayne's Aunt Millie, who drank whiskey and smoked cigars every day of her life till she was 90 whatever, right? She just had a positive state of mind. And so whether that's by your spiritual tradition or your religious tradition or by meditation or yoga or qigong or going out in nature and bathing yourself in, you know, the glory of creation or tantric lovemaking or gizmos, because you can get feedback gizmos that will put you into a more healing state of mind. That's something we need to do, the same way we need to brush our teeth, okay? You don't brush your teeth, you're going to know it, sitting in the dentist's office chair, right? Every time I'm in the dental office chair and I hear that sound, getting all the memories. Oh, and there was that day I ate pie and I didn't brush my teeth, right? So we don't want that. I don't want that for anybody. State of mind, most important, takes time, takes some work. Human contact. So the shutdown, in, for my money, has created more illness and death and suffering than if everybody had gone out and started coughing on each other on day one. Movement. The body is meant to move. And if you don't move it, it puts an incredible strain on all the other organs, right? You need to move to pump the blood. You need to move to breathe. You need to move to let the emotions circulate, especially the emotion of anger, frustration, aggression, so on and so forth. So movement. Breathing, I said. And now you'll see, way down the list comes diet. But yes, diet. Fresh, organic foods. Okay? Then the details, well, you have to eat more grapefruits and less potatoes or something. I don't have a stance on that. Is it fresh? Is it organic? Was it recently alive? Or did it, you know, sit in a tomb for 2 years and now you're eating it? So the fat in a two-year-old salami is incredibly inflammatory because it goes rancid, and rancidity inflames the immune system. But the fat in an organic cow steak, lovingly raised and compassionately killed, is a very different fat if you're going to eat those animals. And then sleep. That sleep is completely underrated. And it's even more, there's even more sleep deprivation in our culture because of the screens and the digital technology. And as it turns out, the screens broadcast the very frequency that the that little center in the brain looks for to see if it's day or night, which is a certain blue. I forget the number, right? And so that's why if you are, God forbid, going to go on a screen after dark, at least get blue blockers that filter that frequency. There you go. Thank you, Stephen Wasserman. He's got his blue blockers. And then at least your brain melatonin center doesn't say, wow, we don't need no melatonin because it's not dark, right? And we talked about being in nature. The Qigong masters say, the Qigong masters say that the energy of nature, if that's 100%, that the energy in a room is 10%, 10% of the life energy. And I recently heard about a study that said, on average, most people spend 93% of their time inside. So go in nature. Go in nature. Come to the Zoom. Please be prepared, if not for yourself, for your loved ones. You're welcome in the Palace of Health. And thank you. Thank you for coming. Please spread the word, okay? I'm not a beer company. I don't have $37 million to overcome ivermectin hesitancy like they gave $37 million to overcome vaccine hesitancy. So the word needs to be mouth to mouth.